You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 23. Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm, and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. On today's show, I'm joined by life coach Adam Kowalik, and we'll be talking about ambition versus enthusiasm and how realizing the difference between the two was a turning point for Adam, transforming him. He says, from being an overweight, really hard to believe, you won't be able to see him, it's a podcast, but so hard to believe, an overweight, overworked and overstressed people-pleasing overachiever into a present, self-empowered, happy person with healthy habits and relationships. So I am super excited for this episode and Adam's perspective on this and what it's enabled him to do. So Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jo. I'm super happy to, to be on your show.
It's amazing to have you, Adam. You had a successful corporate career. So why don't you start here? Tell us a bit more about your story, because you had an epiphany moment when you decided to make a change. And I know that you call this life switch, don't you? Mm. What happened?
Great. So yeah, that's a great point in time to start, I guess. Well, thank you, first of all, for the introduction. It's always nice to hear someone else pick out the highlights. That's a nice thing. So I used to work for, I'm from Sweden. Got a little bit of a British accent because I've spent some time there when I was younger. And I used to work for IKEA. So very Swedish thing, working for corporate Sweden, IKEA. And I worked as a top level manager there. So I was part of different stores and units, and every second year or 2 years almost in between, I was picked up and moved into the next one. A, because I enjoy variety. I like that. B, I was often picked up and put into departments that weren't really functioning so well. Yeah. A lot of times in human resources, like in terms of people not really being productive. So because of my leadership style, I was often brought in and transformed the department in about 2 years. And then it was time for me to move on. I loved it. I really loved it. And I'm super grateful for my time at IKEA because I didn't necessarily have a background in this. I was just given the responsibilities after showing the capacity or the willingness to learn. Mm. And also, obviously, producing results that kind of proved that I can do this job. And I was lucky to have sponsors, mentors who believed in me as a leader. Mm. And they kept, pushing me forward, making way for me to grow. And at the height of my career, and I just turned 30, at the height of my career, I found myself in a room being interviewed, and we were 9 people chosen out of the whole of Europe for IKEA to become groomed as country managers. I was obviously the youngest one there, only 30 years old. And with my background, I have to say, I used to dance and act. That was my thing I did when I was younger.
Wow, so, brilliant.
Yeah. So, and most people at IKEA, they didn't even know that. They just thought I've studied and, I've gone through all kinds of, trainings, whatever. And I was in that room being interviewed by our European CEO responsible and our Swedish CEO of IKEA. And I had this, I haven't said this many times, I haven't shared this story really in this way, but I had this out of body experience. Wow. It was kind of like I was watching myself in that room, and I haven't really had many experiences like that, but it was almost like I could see myself answering the questions, trying to come up with the right responses and everything, just really impressing these people. Obviously, it's an impressive situation. And I kind of realized that, wow, I don't think this is for me. I'm doing this for them. I'm trying to please them. Which is why I often refer to myself as a, you know, recovering people pleaser, yeah. Because it's how I spent most of my life. And this was a Friday. I had that epiphany or that situation happen. And as I was driving back home after the weekend, I 5 a.m. in the morning, I was driving and the sun was coming up. And as the sun was kind of coming through the windshield and started warming me up, it was really, really nice. And I had this deep, deep breath. I took a really deep, relaxing breath. And I realized something. Oh, God, that felt great. Plus, when was the last time I felt like that? When was the last time I had that calm, that peace? And I realized I couldn't remember. Wow. And then I asked myself, if I say yes to this, me going into training to become a country manager, when will be the next time I'll have this moment of peace? Because so far, 9 years being part of IKEA, I hadn't had that. Like, that wasn't my normal. So I realized if I say yes to this, I'll probably have more of what I already have. And I wasn't happy. So that's when I kind of understood that this is no longer for me. It served its purpose. I'm super grateful for that. And now there's something else I'm wanting to create. So that was on Monday. I called my girlfriend and said, I think I'm going to quit. And if I do, do you want to go travel? And, you know, she's a never-ending traveler. She's a restless soul. So she said, of course, yes, absolutely. That was Monday. Wednesday, I handed in my resignation. And 2 weeks later, I'd actually left the company. So they were very, very confused. There I was being interviewed to become a country manager, which is the goal for most people. And 2 weeks later, I said, no, I think I'm done. So I left. We traveled. We moved to Cambodia, lived on a beach, living a very pina colada lifestyle there. Money wasn't an issue. I'd never really taken a vacation in my life. So I built up, you know, I saved up a lot of days, a lot of money and all of that. But that's when the big surprise happened. I got super, super depressed. You know, living in paradise, on a paradise beach, I couldn't get out of bed. I just... To me, I think it was an identity crisis. Kind of like everything I built, everything I'd become, who I knew I was, what I was good at, what people appreciated me for, all of that was gone in matters of weeks. And that kind of caught up with me. And I had up until this point, I had lived my life with this kind of like, when I have X, then I'll be happy. And again, here we were. Money wasn't an issue. Living in a beautiful place, having everything we wanted, and yet I wasn't happy. And that's when it all came crashing down. Oh no, what if it's not about my circumstances? What if it's not about the next thing? What if it's about something else? So I had this 5 month experience where I was just in a very, very dark place, searching myself, soul searching. And, you know, I want to say finally, but it sounds so finite or like it had a turning point, an exact one. But finally, I did come out of it. And the one thing that really helped me do that was during this 5 month period when I was really struggling, I was reading a lot. So I'm doing a lot of soul searching, a lot of inward focusing. And I was reading and I read a book about Ayurveda. So Ayurveda is an Indian philosophy about life. And it has many different ways. You can talk about Ayurvedic food, Ayurvedic movements, exercise, thinking, relationships, all kinds of things. This book was a very generic book on Ayurveda. And there was a chapter, a small chapter, but a very life-transforming one. That was about enthusiasm versus ambition. And when I read it, I realized, oh, that's me. That's how I've been living my life. Basically, it's about, as a human being, we have the capacity for ambition and enthusiasm. Enthusiasm being present, having joy in the moment, being enthusiastic. Ambition is about the strive for the future. It's about the drive. It's about creating something into the future. Now, if all you have is ambition, then you might not really ever enjoy what you have because you have no enthusiasm. Mm. So you, as human beings, we want to be able to balance those two pole opposites almost. And that's kind of when I realized that, oh, I didn't necessarily become happier from that day, but for the first time, I kind of realized where I wanted to spend my focus cultivating and choosing happiness. So it was not so much about being ambitious or driven, but it was about becoming more enthusiastic, more appreciative of the present moment. And that's really when my big journey started.
Wow.
I talked for a long time.
No, that is amazing, because I'm sure so many, I mean, I totally relate to this. This is why I think this is a fascinating topic. So many of us are always striving for this, you know, this thing that's going to make us happy, whether that is, and I relate to this from my corporate career days, with huge ambition, like wanting to get to the next stage in my career, and I'd get there and I'd think, oh, is that it? Is that, you know, what's next? And until we spoke before, and you talked about this enthusiasm versus ambition, I think having not known that, that's why I became probably very anxious and stressed. Because I was not enjoying the present moment.
And that's exactly my experience as well, yeah.
Because we're all, like, rushing around in day-to-day life, and whether that's career or just living our day-to-day, and it's really, really busy, isn't it? So how do you get the balance between the both? Because I'm assuming also you do still need that, where am I progressing to? Or is it possible just to be enthusiastic and live in the present moment?
I think it is. So I stumbled upon another concept or definition that I kind of want to name drop here, because it gave me a depth to this understanding. It was called the game of life. And there is a talk you can find. It's a guy called George Pransky, an American psychologist. And George Pransky, he does this very, very well. You can, I think you can purchase the audio where he speaks about this for 45 minutes. I've got my own kind of slightly modified version of it. And I kind of want to share pieces of this. So George Pransky talks about the game of life, meaning, so he says there's the game of life and then there's the living life, right? The way, what I hear when he says that is, okay, there's enthusiasm and then there's ambition. The game of life is everything you get to do, all the roles you get to play, meaning you can be a parent, you can be a father, you can be a brother, you can be a mother, you can be a colleague, you can be a life coach, you can be a podcaster, all beautiful things that you get to do, right? That's the game of life. All the things you can achieve, those are the games that you get to play. Now, living life is something completely different. It's basically your emotional and mental fitness. It's about the spiritual strength, the spiritual groundedness. if you moved into a cave today and you lived there and meditated for 18 years all by yourself, just eating rice every day, I'm sure that you could live life enthusiastically. You'd be grateful for the bowl of rice you have. You'd be super connected to who you are and the world and however you want to define that. That's kind of like living life in a very high spirit kind of way. But I have to argue, you're not necessarily being part of the game of life, right? You're not necessarily playing the roles and exercising your uniqueness and expressing it and all of those things, which I think is a beautiful opportunity we have. So something that I often refer to is, and I can't remember whoever said this the first time, but you know, it's said that we humans, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, right? Rather than being, you know, human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. Everybody's free to believe what they want. But when I entertained that idea, I realized if that's true, just imagine how hard we had to fight as spiritual beings to have this human experience.
Wow.
Right? If that's true, you know, for us to be here, having, you know, if we are the source of the spirituality, why would we choose to have a human experience? Because it's full of a lot of different things, right? I mean, hardship, pain, as well as joy, love, and all kinds of things. But we wanted that for some reason. Why would you then trade that away? Why would you not embrace that? And that, I think, is the game of life. So I want to say that ambition to me is about playing the game of life. And why you would want to play the game of life, why you would want to lean into ambition, is because in that you get to grow. You get to self-express and you get to give back, contribute, right? That's why we play the game of life. That's why we get to be ambitious, because it's a way for us to express, partake, give back, support, right? And enthusiasm, well, that's about the present moment. That's about just being, enjoying, and just being where we are and being content and happy with what we have. So I realized that it's not either or, it's really both. Sometimes when, you know, this is a podcast, we can't really show this, but when I do talk about this and I use, a whiteboard or a screen, I'll draw this as a chart, you know, so we've got the vertical line is living life and then the horizontal line is the game of life. And if you think about it, the game of life, you could talk about how successful you are, how ambitious you've been. But if you're not living life very high, it's a very small, small, small area on that chart. Mm. Even if you're maxing out, even if you achieve all your goals, because you're not living life in a high spirit, with mental and emotional fitness and groundedness, it's a very small area you're covering. But if you live life enthusiastically and you play the game of life, now that is jackpot. Now you're covering such a huge area. And to me, that's really what this balance is about. It's about being enthusiastic, because it's in that that you get to truly enjoy the ambition that you might have.
I love it. That's incredible. I absolutely love that. So for you, so this was like the epiphany moment and you discovered ambition versus and enthusiasm. And then what then? So how did you use that? What steps did you take? How did you take those steps to get where you are now?
Well, this is something that you're very familiar with. And this is why you and I, we work so well together, I think. I think a lot of it has to do with reprogramming, reconditioning your thinking, your mind. I built a career on two things: being ambitious and being good at spotting problems. Now, the issue with that is, if you're very overambitious, what tends to happen is that you never really celebrate the victories or when you have. So I was never really happy. I was never really pleased. And because I was very good at spotting problems, you know, there is a saying, what you focus on will grow, what you water will grow. And I was very focused on problems. So I always saw problems. Mm-hmm. It was a rumor that people would say, like, well, you got an idea? Yeah. Go to Adam. He's going to shoot it down instantly. He's going to tell you what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I'd be in these, management meetings, and people would just pitch their ideas. And I would go, wrong, bad, no, not going to work.
The problem with this is...
come back with something better, yeah. And the really strange thing is I kind of prided myself for being good at that. But I also realized when I stepped out of that environment, that problem searching wasn't very conducive to living a happy life, because I saw problems everywhere. Mm. And, you know, you talk about Einstein and Frankenstein. Mm. Well, the Frankenstein, if you think about it, we're almost hardwired to look for the negative things in life because it kept us alive.
Yes.
Well, if you start strengthening that even more and you build a successful career, and I'm saying that because, listen, when you reward that behavior, the brain notices, and it's going to hardwire that thinking, right? It's going to make even stronger neural pathways for that behavior. Mm. So I was so fast, so efficient thinking like this on autopilot. So I was ruining my relationship. I was limiting the possibility for my happiness and all kinds of things. And that's when I realized that, okay, the antidote to this is enthusiasm. So I started studying that. I started listening more to that. And I found mindfulness, which I think is a great tool. It's not a religion, I think. It's not a state. It's a tool. It's like going to the gym. It's like buying a gym membership, right? So you meditate in order to strengthen the Einstein versus the Frankenstein, right? And when I started doing that, I realized I had more and more moments in life where I felt more connected to my higher self than I had with the reactive self, the Frankenstein, right? So, I mean, there are many different steps that I probably took, but it's really, I think that is one of them, realizing that slowing things down, observing your thinking, realize that what you can observe, you are not. Meaning, if I can observe my thinking, I am not my thoughts, right? I'm the thing that's observing that. Mm. Whatever that is, I have no idea. It's probably the spiritual being having the human experience or whatever. But doing that work and strengthening that and being, consistent about that allowed me to start reprogramming and reconditioning my thinking and behaviors.
Amazing. Because I know you do a lot of mindset work, don't you, with people?
Precisely.
Mindset coaching. And it's massively powerful. Mm. So the reward thing is super, super interesting. So when I work with my clients, the funny thing that comes up is, they set goals with me, and I'll usually say something like, and when you've achieved that, how are you going to celebrate or reward yourself? And they go, oh, I don't know, I'll just be happy if I do. And it's like, no, it's really, really important that we do it, because it triggers the dopamine, feel-good reward chemical in the brain. And that helps us take, doing that and thinking about our next step going forward helps us do that. And I really loved what you were saying. Mindfulness is really, really important. So I always say first step is awareness.
Correct.
So it's actually, that means you need to be kind of observing what is going on, your thoughts and feelings and emotions and sensations, without blame, shame, judgment. And then it's about, I think you said it in a similar way, I have thoughts, but I am not my thoughts. Mm. And suddenly you're in a calmer state. So for me, that's what calms the Frankenstein limbic, automatic, fast, efficient, reactive state that we have, where we just kind of keep going, or we feel stressed or anxious, and it activates all the stuff like, I must prove myself, or, I doubt myself, and all of that kind of stuff. And we access Einstein, the prefrontal cortex, that is really great at problem solving rather than searching, or solution finding, I like to call it, because I think even the word sometimes problem has the, you know, it's a, like a negative kind of like connotation, doesn't it? Everything's a problem. Whereas I like to think about, how do I search for the solution? Mm. That just feels like it moves you forward step by step, more than kind of focusing on things are wrong and it's a problem. And so even when I work with clients who say, so we talk about what are your great strengths, and I say I'm a great problem solver, and I'll say, and solutions finder.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
That's a good distinction.
I love that.
Exactly what I discovered for myself, that rather focusing on the problems, I was more focused on, you know, solutions. And just that small shift did, you know, play a big role in my thinking.
Yeah.
Because rather than shooting ideas down, I would improve. I would add to versus trying to, you know, kill it.
Yeah.
And that really did a great thing for me in terms of my outlook on life in general.
Yes. And because there are always challenges along the way, aren't they? Whatever mm-hmm. we're trying to do, this is part of playing the game of life, I guess,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, why are we going to do this stuff? Because there's always going to be stuff that comes up. It's a roadblock. It's an obstacle. If you can tune your mind, your thoughts into a more helpful way, and you practice and rehearse that as a pattern, you discover, don't you, over a period of time, I think what I'm hearing from you is the more that you do that, that more naturally becomes your default way of living your life. So that, I guess, you feel more, you know, enthusiastic and happier. And precisely, the big stuff doesn't feel as big.
Precisely.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So along the way, what were some of your maybe biggest learning points, some of your biggest lessons that you could share with other mm-hmm. people?
Well, I think the biggest one, and we referenced it already, I think it is that you're not your thoughts, right? Because when I started realizing that, I used to be a very serious person. So I used to take my thinking very seriously.
Mm.
And when you start realizing, if I'm not my thinking, if I'm not my thoughts, then I don't have to take them as seriously. And that helped because, you know, as I said, you go to the gym, you do your meditations, your mindfulness, and you start detaching. You start having a distance between what you're thinking and how you're reacting to that. And all of a sudden, because you're observing your thoughts and realizing that's not who I am, you can, well, thoughts are like clouds, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that they'll come and they'll go. Often mm-hmm. what I'll make an analogy of, it's like you're standing on a platform waiting for the train, right? And in comes a train. Now, if you don't board the train will leave
mm-hmm.
and another train will take its place. And you get to decide which train to board,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's kind of that, like, and when you start realizing, oh, I'm not the train, I'm on the platform waiting, then when I identify each train and realize, oh, that train is, that's a bad news city. Oh, I'm not going to board that one. That's not my destination.
Mm.
I'll wait for the next one. And then there's the happy sunshine rainbow destination. I'll guess that's my train. That's the one I've been waiting for. And you can board that one. So, and I'll say this as well. Even if you happen to board the wrong train, because that happens sometimes,
yeah.
we get distracted and we get on the wrong train. Because you do awareness, as you said, I think it's absolutely the first step. Because you practice awareness, you could become aware when the conductor is calling out, maybe like, next stop is a horrible city. And you realize, I got on the wrong train again.
Yeah.
You could pull the cord or you know, ring the bell and get off. Mm. Right? You don't have to ride to the end station. So I think it's just like, you know, when you start becoming aware of this, you get to choose, you get to observe.
And I was just going to say, because this, it's about choice, isn't
yes.
it, then?
Yes.
Massively. And a lot of people I speak to about that, so we do have choice. You know, people will say, I have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have choice. It's the way we see things, isn't it? The way we choose to see things. We all have choice. And for me, that once we have choice, it gives us freedom. to do things, always, to feel better, whatever that is. So yeah, choice is massive in this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big part of what I try to help people see, that there is always a choice and you get to make it. Something I often talk about is self-leadership, and it's part of that. It's to recognize, you know, the choice that you're making. Because I often say, if you blame someone or something for your circumstances, you're giving away the power to change, right? Yeah. So by reclaiming that, stepping into the, you know, the thing that you do control, you can then start making the decisions that will actually make a difference.
Mm. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. So let me just say, so obviously realizing that the thoughts are not who I am, I'm something bigger than that. That was a big one. And I have to say, there is one more. Well, there are several more, but I'll say these two have been one of the, probably the biggest influences of my life. It's the thinking, and it's also that we all want the same thing. We all do our best, basically. Mm. When I started shifting the way I see people, that's when life really started transforming, because there was so much less judgment going on. Like I judged people less. Mm. I didn't blame people. And really funny is, and this is probably something that you already have some knowledge around because of your vast knowledge about the brain. But when you judge people, at least this has been my experience, me judging others almost creates the foundation or the fertile ground for my mind to judge also me.
Mm.
Right? It's like it doesn't make a difference between, okay, so it's okay to judge others but not myself, or the other way around. If you're judging yourself, often you are also judging other people. So when I stop judging other people, thinking or labeling in that way, the inner dialogue shifted as well.
Mm.
And I stopped judging myself as much.
Hmm.
And I think that together just made my life so much more, you know, joyous and more enthusiastic, I think.
Brilliant. I often think of that judgment thing, actually, really in the way that you've said. I think when we're judging people, what we're actually doing is judging ourselves of the things that, it's like holding a mirror up.
Hmm.
And it's the things we see in people we don't particularly like are often the things we're seeing in ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're projecting it that way.
Yeah.
And it's funny how things shift when you're conscious of that and you're aware of that, and you start choosing to think and see things with a different lens, with a different perspective. So some incredible nuggets and pieces of gold in there, Adam. Thank you so much. If somebody was in a position at the moment, they may be maybe like we were, you know, these high achieving, people pleasing, like, you know, career ambitious people, and you suddenly have that moment. I know I had one. Wasn't quite like yours, it was, but a bit similar, where you just go, what am I doing? You know, is this what life is about? And maybe somebody like that, or maybe, you know, an entirely different situation, but they know things can't continue as they are. What piece of advice? So you usually say, here's the mic to the world for 15 minutes. What's the message to that person when you've got that mic?
Well, first of all, I would like to say, in a way, that first of all, you're not alone in that. Most of us, we're conditioned to live life a certain way. So you're in good company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to sometimes know that, you know, I'm not alone. Now, if you're noticing that there should be more to life than this, if you don't know exactly what that is, then go have fun about that. Like, go start experimenting and start trying new things, because it's in that experimentation, trying new things, that you might actually find something that you enjoy. Now, I still think that we should do the inner work, meaning, again, looking inwards, working towards an emotional and mental stability and fitness. And that happens through meditation or mindfulness. It can happen through reading books, listening to podcasts, very similar to this one, because it helps us to, well, kind of like, you know, you probably heard, and your listeners as well, that we are the average of the five closest relationships we have. Well, what if the five closest relationships aren't that good? Well, I think it's not necessarily the closest relationships. It's really the relationship you spend the most time with, right? So what if you changed some of those relationships, even if you can't physically do so? But what if you started hanging out with experts on YouTube, or on Spotify, or, you know, wherever they are, or books, you know, downloading Kindle, whatever? You start spending time, many, many hours a day, around those topics and around those experts. I'm sure that you're going to be shifting your average to align more with this new group of people that you hang out with. And I guess that's why I kind of like, you know, if you're finding yourself there, start asking questions. I mean, that's a whole other episode. But my main, like my passion thing to talk about are just questions, how our questions can determine our level of happiness. So if you're in that place, examine the questions you're asking. If you're not asking questions, and what I mean by that is, if you're finding yourself saying, oh God, I'm so fed up with my life. Oh God, I just don't like this job. That's not a question. That's an, you know, exclamation mark, punctuation. It's not a question mark. When you start exchanging that and you go something like, I wonder what else is out there. I wonder what would make me come alive. I wonder what would light me up. You start asking those questions. You do this with mindfulness, journaling, meditations, and answers are going to be coming up, because the brain works like Google. When you ask a question, it's going to go, hang on, let me bring up the answers, right? It's always going to do that. At least from my perspective, it you know, what you focus on will grow. So when you introduce questions, your brain's going to go, hang on, let me find that, which is why you don't want to say, oh God, I had such a crap day today, because the brain's going to go, oh, hang on, let me bring up the evidence for such a crap day. And that's all you remember.
It is.
Or you shift that out and you go, hang on, what was the least crappy thing today? Or even better, what was the best thing today? And your brain's going to go, let me find that for you. So you do this, and I'm sure that, you know, there are going to be shifts that happen throughout your life. And once you take one step, you will see more things. You take another step, you will see more things. I have a mentor out there called, his name is Kyle Cease. He used to be a comedian, an American comedian. Now he's this huge mindfulness teacher. And he often asks people to do this heart list, kind of like, what's in your heart? What do you desire? And you do this like massive 60 items on that list. And you go like, wow, look at this. And he said, fantastic. Do one small thing of that list. And you do one small thing. And then it says, now redo the whole list. And you're like, I just added 60 points. Yeah, but because you took that one small step, your whole world most likely transformed. Like the way you see yourself, the way you see the world could have changed. And because of that, your desires might have changed as well. That's how powerful those small steps can be, I think.
Amazing. I love it. Ask yourself better questions.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things, like,
to
think about. If I'm not in a good state, I'm asking myself, we have automatically the ability to ask ourselves, or the capacity, we're asking ourselves like really bad questions. So what if we asked ourselves better questions?
Yeah, that
really switches things up, doesn't it? And they just keep reinforcing that. Because the brain to me is like, I totally get what you're saying. It's like a library, isn't it, of books and stories. And we might have the horror section and like the miserable section. But when you go to the library, if you want a better, happier life, why not pull out the happy ending, the happy story. On the evidence of that, like you said, the brain is looking for evidence of that. So why not show it? The great evidence. And Adam, I love it. I love speaking to you. I always love speaking to you. It's been amazing having you on the show. You have to come back. We have got so many more topics to talk about. So finally, if people want to connect with you, because you have to go and connect with Adam, he's just a total superstar. Where can people find you? Where do you hang out?
Well, I hang out in the most normal places on, you know, on the web. You can go to my website, adamkowalek.com, and that's K-A-W-A-L-E-C.com. And I actually created a little bit of a free gift for your listeners if they wanted to download that based on what we've talked about today. So they can go to adamkowalek.com/mojo-matters. Yeah. So they do that and they can find a little bit of a bundle that I put together from a couple of things that I've created in the past. And then I'm on Instagram, adamkowalek.ig, or Facebook, adamkowalek.fb.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Joe Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.